Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 153 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Very, very excited to have back Bitten Johnson. She is a registered nurse, addiction and relapse prevention specialist, and ADDIS sugar certified, and a forerunner in the sugar addiction field in Sweden. And I'd also like to say, really, and internationally, she is a forerunner in the sugar addiction field. She's written the book Sugar Bomb, which she's currently having translated into English. I cannot wait till that comes out. She also has a cookbook and is on the board of directors of the Food Addiction Institute and a faculty member of InFact.
Bitten, no, I quit that.
You did? Okay. Both. I was going to say, we just had Esther on about two episodes ago. Okay. So she's given that up because she's got a lot on her plate. Are you still doing the diet, doctor?
Nope.
Okay. But she's really focused on, she's developed a holistic addiction medicine and sugar protocol, and she's now training and educating and tutoring the new generation of sugar addiction counselors. So, and we've had so many people that have gone through your program on the podcast. Most recently, last week, we had Rachel Murray on, and all these fabulous people from SugarX Global that have gone through your training. So welcome back. We're so glad to have you. And I'm just always excited to talk to you.
I'm so happy to hang with you. We have quite a story now, and I never forget when we met first time, and it's been wonderful to have you in my network and get to know you.
Oh, I agree. I feel so honored to have you in my network. So we've been chit-chatting for a while before we started recording this, but Bitten's been on the podcast many, many times. I will link all of her previous episodes because for me, the first time I heard Bitten talk, I was listening to the Quit Sugar Summit. And every single thing she said, I was like writing down like, yes, amen. I mean, I was just so excited to hear someone talk the way that she was talking. And I've every time, like I said, we've talked and done an interview, I've learned so much. So today's topic that we want to talk about, which I think is going to be really incredible, is this question. Is it worse? Is it the worst thing that can happen to have this illness of addiction, or is it actually a blessing in disguise? So I'm just going to kick it off to you, Bitten, with, I know you love this topic, so kind of get us started talking about that.
Well, yeah, it's a big topic, but I like to share, when we talked about what we're going to talk about, you know, this comes to me a lot that I like to share some of my experience there, because when my ex-husband, bless his heart, and thank you to him for saving my life, getting me into treatment in California, the 26th of September, 1985, I was drunk that day, but I had been sober from the day after. And that changed my life forever. So, but you know, I was filled with shame to be an alcoholic, a woman in alcoholism. It was nothing could be worse. So I was furious with him forcing me in there, threatening to tell my employer, call my family in Sweden. You know, that's the worst thing an alcoholic wants, that people should know. The funny thing is that everybody around an alcoholic know that person has problem, but nobody talks about it. And it's the same with sugar, you know. Because it's very similar illnesses, of course. But so I was in shame for 2 weeks. I was devastated. And I kept thinking, you know, I can never look people in the eye anymore. I can never have fun anymore. My life is over. I didn't want to commit suicide. I never thought about that really. But, you know, the thinking that was in my mind, how can I move to a deserted island and live my life alone? Because I can never see, let people see me again or face people again. That was a very real thought at that time. But of course, you know, you have false feelings, false thoughts when you have been, you know, using a psychoactive drug. So that's what I have. So I can see today that that was not something to take serious, but I didn't know that at the time. It was serious for me. But anyway, after 2 weeks in treatment, I saw this movie with a doctor, Dr. Ohms. It's actually on YouTube, that he explained exactly why this was a brain illness. And I was absolutely floored. I thought, this must be fake. Somebody must be making fun of us or joking with us. Because, you know, alcoholism wasn't seen as an illness then. And there are still people from the flat-earthed society that think that addiction isn't a brain illness. Bless them. But, you know, so anyway, but this started, you know, my wheels going in my head. And then, of course, the staff underlined this and they gave us more information. And I was sent to University of Irvine during my treatment to take a 3-point training of dopamine research. So this was really real, 1985. So I came out of there. And of course, the first year wasn't easy because I still had a lot of addictive thinking, feeling sorry for myself. And, you know, there's no fun to go out and eat when I can't drink. And poor me, you know, which is a very classical symptom of the illness. I know that now, but people started, you know, I started to hang around with recovering people and they were so happy. I thought, what's wrong with them? Are they crazy? How can you be happy when you are a recovering alcoholic and you can't drink? And, you know, and they said, well, you know, that's an easy price to pay for the life I have today. And I thought, how is that going around, you know, because my mind was still so much into wanting to have a drug. The drug has a tremendous power over your reward center. That is the problem. You think it is you thinking a lot of these things, but it is the drug having power on your reward center. It's a biochemical problem. I didn't know that at the time, but now I know that. So I'm just saying that to people listening that are ashamed that they're addicts, that's a symptom of the illness. That is due to the drug. The drug has caused your shame and stigma and all that because it has hampered your brain. You're malnourished in your brain. You have a lack of neurotransmitters. Some are too high, some too low. There is a lot of things, you know, you have probably, you're not eating properly if you use sugar and processed food or drink or whatever. So you have fatty acid deficiencies in your brain, which really hampers the transmission in the synapses, you know, the network connection in your brain. So your brain is really, really, really hampered. But, you know, nothing of that I knew at that time. So I can see back, you know, the crazy thinking I had that this was horrible. Poor me, poor me. We used to joke and say, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. Sort of. And I remember also in the beginning thinking, you know, I wonder what drug I could use that will not make me addicted and give me consequences. You know, that was not a sick feeling because my reward center wanted to be drugged because it was used to that. So it takes a long time to rewire your brain, what I call brain bypass, you know, create all these new pathways. And remember, the brain has a tremendous neuroplasticity, capacity to make new connections. We used to say that neurons that fire together, wire together. So everything new we learn, we do, we say, we talk about, everything is biochemistry. So if you want to go into recovery, you have to be an athlete practicing yourself. You can't talk yourself healthy, read, or think yourself into recovery. You have to change behavior. That's the key. You have to change behavior. I can never tell my clients, enough about, you know, that that is the number one thing you have to do. So actually, those people that I met that had been in recovery for many years, when I was huffing and puffing and thinking everything was horrible, you know, they said to me things like, oh, this is easy. All you have to do is change everything in your life. And I'm like, what? You know, how's that possible? And they said to me, well, you do it one small step at a time, one day at a time. And, you know, addictive thinking is not one step at a time here and now, because in the beginning, your brain is so hampered that it will ruminate about everything that you missed or stupid things you did. Or, I mean, you are in yesterday feeling miserable about, you know, how you were behaving, eating, thinking, oh, why did I eat that? Look how fat I am now. And I'm a loser. I'm miserable. You know, I'm the worst person on earth. You're really good at beating down on yourself. Or the next minute you are in tomorrow doing what we call geographical escape. So you think, oh, well, you know, everything will be better if I get that new job, or if I divorce my husband, or if I buy a new car, or if I get a dog, or blah, 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 blah. So you're making, you know, what we call, you build air castles. And we also joke and say that everybody can build air castles at times, but only addicts move in there. So, you know, you have a totally unrealistic thing about, you know, well, I'm going to move and I'm going to get this job, and it's not reality. So you are constantly vacillating. Is that the correct word?
Vacillating, yeah.
Yeah, between horrible yesterday, regret, miserable, and, oh, well, tomorrow I'm going to be better. I'm going to daydream. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. So what are you missing here and now? So the first thing you have to do in order to come to the point where you actually can say one day, God, I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic and a sugar addict, because I am, because that has given me a life that was beyond my dreams. The people I know, the person I feel I am today with a, you know, solid kernel in myself, that I trust myself, I'm my best friend. You know, I'm curious, I'm open-minded. There are so many things that this recovery has given me that that would take hours, you know, I think, to talk about. But, you know, there can't, it can't, when I started doing like people told me that were ahead of me in recovery, being here and now, changing behavior, focus, keep my eyes on the ball, taking one day at a time, having faith that thing would turn out, things would be better. When I was doing that, suddenly there comes a day when I'm thinking, I don't wake up with a hangover. I don't regret what I did today. I'm starting to be a friend with my body instead of always thinking, oh, I have to lose weight, and, you know, my butt is too big, or this is wrong, and blah, blah, blah. That, and, you know, that negative voice is what I call the red dog, the illness, the destructive, negative, nasty red dog. And, you know, the only thing red dog wants is that you should do the drug until you die. So once you realize that you are not a bad person, you are not your enemy, you have an enemy in you, and you can conquer that. You can treat that as a nasty dog. So with good dog training, you can get that dog to behave. And you can really start focusing on growing the blue dog, the real healthy you. You learn things that you grow from. And, you know, that comes with everything, people you are with. You know, be with people that, you know, give energy to your blue dog. Eat food that gives energy to your blue dog. Be in environments that give energy to your blue dog. And in the beginning, like with anything, you know, I remember it was the same for me as it's been for my clients, because when they come to me, they had no hobbies. Their only hobby was to eat processed food and sugar, right? Because it had taken over their life. And, you know, they didn't see that. So when they came to me in the beginning, and I said, when I had my 4-day intensive, and they could say, you know, I asked them, why are you here? And they could say to me, well, you know, I'm here to deal with my food problem. And I said, okay, because everybody thinks it's horrible to say I am an addict. I love saying that today. I'm an addict. You could advertise that in the sky if you want, because, you know, I live with my illness and I know what it is and I know how to deal with it. There is no shame, nothing. So anyway, they come and said, well, you know, I have a food problem, sort of like that, almost whispering. And then they laughed a little bit nervously. And then they all said, well, you know, I have a lot of problem, but here I'm going to deal with the food problem. And I thought, my God, oh boy, this is going to be an interesting week. And then we go through, you know, the training, the intensive, which I did a lot, or treatment or whatever. I've done different things during these 29 years I worked with this. And said, when they're going to go home, and I asked them, what has done the most impact to you during this training? And they said, you know what? I have understood I have one problem, my sugar addiction. And that has a lot of consequences. That's the key. Now I know that person will start recovery. Because we can't split ourselves, you know. We have to see that everything is connected to everything. And the problem with addiction, Shoban, is that it's so invasive. It goes into you and you don't see the addiction. So you don't see that the wagon, you put the wagon in front of the horse. You think that you are eating because you're depressed or because you're poor or because you don't get the job you want, or you come up with billions of reasons. That is the red dog fooling you so that you stick to keep doing these destructive things. It is the opposite. It's because you became addicted once, probably many years ago when you were a little kid and were exposed to this drug. And then all these negative things happening because you're addicted. And once you reveal the red dog in you and you see this, you can start thinking, aha, my brain got hijacked from the drug. It doesn't have to be like that. I'm not a bad person. And when I show clients, look at the battle you have had for years with this illness, all the things you did, all the money you spent on trying to fix the problem, all the energy you've spent to trying to do this, you've exercised, you've dieted, you've gone to therapy, you've tried, you know, everything, pills, powders, boo, boo, boo. And I said to them, so that means that you are a weak-willed, bad person? You know what I said? It's the opposite. You're one of the strongest people I know, because we are. We are incredible strong. I used to say even, do you think a normal person would have survived everything you have done? And they look at me shocked and said, no, you're right. They probably wouldn't. No, I said, they wouldn't. So we, because of the addiction, in a way, we are extremely, extremely strong. And we are very, very sensitive. I love that, that we are very strong and very sensitive. But, you know, if you have the wrong toolbox and you're trying the wrong things all the time, not understanding that you have an addiction, a red dog, you're of course going to twist everything around and put the wagon in front of the horse. And you're going to run in circles and never get anywhere. So this is the first thing you have to understand. If you're an addict, you have to really talk to addiction specialists. I also say to people, if you break the leg, don't go to the dentist. That's stupid. You have to go to somebody that, you know, heal broken legs. And it's the same here, because people go to dietitians and psychologists and doctors and nurses and God knows what therapists, and they are doing a good job. But if they're not trained in addiction, they're going to miss the point and they can't put you on the right track. So that's why it's actually a blessing in disguise, because you get to think about it. You don't have to eat junk food. I mean, many illnesses, you have to take a lot of medications that have a lot of side effects. You have no choice. Here, you just take away the poison and you get to eat healthy food. I mean, how good is that? You get to work on having a good sleep pattern. You have to work on, you know, being a loving, caring, empathetic person. How bad is that? You know, because you reach your hand to other addicts and you help them, because just by telling your story, you reach other people. How bad is that? How bad is it, you know, that you get your energy back and you can do and fulfill your dreams? How bad is that? No. So, you know, it is a blessing. But the problem is that if you don't accept it, if you don't know you have it, first of all, and I advise anyone that thinks they have it but don't know to contact some of the sugar specialists on my website and have the sugar diagnostic evaluation done. Because then, you know, you will really get all the cards on the table. You will see your whole life story, what's happened, all the consequences. It might be painful, but, you know, I used to say too, the truth will set you free, but first it will make you crazy. That's a good saying. So actually, I think, you know, if you really get to know what this is all about and listen to people in recovery, you can see that it is a blessing. It is not something to fear, or it is the red dog that wants you to be confused, have shame, stigma, fear, because red dog is sitting there. Oh my God, what if she quits doing the drug? You know, then I have to shrink. Red dog doesn't want that. Red dog wants you to keep your destructive lifestyle so it gets his drug. And you should really be aware of that, that a lot of the things an active addict says or do, it's actually the red dog creating a scenario where, you know, it can keep the drug or keep a backdoor to the drug. So of course, many people go to specialists that don't understand addiction, that work with moderation therapy, because they don't want to lose the drug. And I think about, you know, we have this group on Facebook, Sugar Bomb in Your Brain. And one day recently, I saw this woman writing a short thing. And I thought, oh, yeah, that was exactly me. She said, you know, I have known for a long time that I have the addiction, but I didn't want to admit it because then I have to do something about it. In other words, I don't want to give up the drug. Mm-hmm. So the process of giving up the drug is painful. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, your hangover, withdrawal, you feel miserable in the beginning. But, you know, one day you're going to start feeling this, you know, bubbling joy inside of you, the energy coming back. You start smiling again. Suddenly, you know, nature is more beautiful than ever. Wildflowers start smelling. You start having fun playing with people, joking, and you think, God, what's happening with me?
Yeah, I always say it's like the light. For me, it felt like the light of inside just came back on. It was like, oh, yeah.
Is this the way I could feel?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I think I pretty much covered, you know, our topic for the evening. So if you have any questions, shoot.
No, I think this is so good. You just said so many amazing things, and I couldn't agree more with, but it's hard in the beginning to think of it, I think, as the blessing in disguise. And like you said, that's part of that red dog thinking. But yeah, once that light turns back on, and then you have all these like tools, like that's the other thing. I'm so grateful for all these tools that I've used in my recovery that I wouldn't have probably found otherwise if I wasn't an addict. So I have things like meditation and tapping, and I love walking every day in nature. Like you said, now I can actually appreciate it more. I can be more present with like family and friends. I have so much more time in the day because I'm not wondering what I'm going to eat or not eat like all the time, you know, so much more mental freedom.
A stable energy, not this up and down with the blood sugar.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, my breathing exercises, knowing that when I pet my dog and, you know, cuddle my dog, I get oxytocin, you know, all this. And I think, you know, the two most important things is, you know, knowledge. So, you know, that you have to quit the drug food and the trigger foods. And that is the first step. You cannot walk past that step. You have to take away the drug, period. Then you start working on your recovery. So knowledge is incredibly important. Knowledge, you know, about what addiction is all about, the disease concept, how the brain, addicted brain works, you know, what the steps are and so forth. And support. You need to be with like-minded. I mean, like the first time you and I talked, we never met. Mm-hmm. And it's like we've known each other forever. Mm-hmm. We were talking in the mouth of each other. Oh, yeah, whatever, this, that, and that. Because, and that I felt this many times, when I meet other recovering addicts, it's like a light is going on somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to talk because they understand my language, even without words.
Yeah.
To try to explain addiction to a normie, I mean, I don't know. That's like trying to explain, you know, try to explain space to a two-year-old. I mean, it's really very, very strange. But with each other, we have like a special language.
Yeah.
So all the friends I have today in recovery, I said, that's amazing. All over the world. I just love that.
That's a huge gift. I can call anyone
anytime, you know, middle of the night or whatever, you know. And I know we can immediately start sharing, you know, everything in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a huge gift.
It's a huge gift, yes.
And again, probably something, you know, I do think about, okay, people that don't have this addiction, they might not be on the same path to find all these things. So they might not be able to live their life to their the fullest. Because the addiction has kind of put us on this path in a way to help heal ourselves. And I also loved how you mentioned earlier how strong addicts actually are.
Yes. And they they are weak.
Yes. That's,
you know, so interesting when I talk to addicts and I point out everything. Look how strong you are. Look how strong you are. And first they stare at me like, you know, she's nuts. She's crazy. What do you mean strong? And I start with the sugar curve that we do in sugar, you know, I start showing them, you know, the progression and everything they've done, because we map all that out and we show them. And I said, no, what do you think now? You're right. I never thought of it that way. I always saw myself as bad. Oh, you're not. Think about it. If you can transform all the energy you've spent on all this, battling this illness for 20, 30, 40 years, can you imagine what you can do with the right toolbox? The sky is the limit, right?
Yeah. I just love that so much. And it's just so true when you mention, yeah, how many people have, how much money you've spent on all the different therapies, techniques, diet books, all the time. I mean, just so much that we've, but
obsession with scale, weight, hating your body, always feeling you're a bad person. That's like, you know, radioactivity eating in you. It's horrible. Oh, yeah.
So making that, shift to, you know, this much healthier space where you, like you said, you're your own best friend, where you actually, like I can now, and I used to say this for years, but not really feel it. But I, every day, one of my affirmations is I love and accept myself exactly as I am. And I really mean it.
Yeah, you know? Me too. It's so natural. It's so natural to say that.
Yeah.
And also, when I was active, drinking and, you know, using sugar and all that, when I wake up in the morning, I used to think, oh, God, what's going to happen today? Oh, dread, you know, what if this happened? What if the car breaks down? What if this, blah, 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 blah. And now when I wake up, you know, what an exciting day. What challenges will I meet today? And am I smart enough to deal with them? And also one of the absolutely most important thing, you know, that is to ask for help. Addicts are lousy at asking for help because they don't want to reveal how bad things are. But the thing I've learned, you know, through these years is if I have a problem, I could call 2-3 of my friends and say, if this was your problem, what would you do? And then I call the next one, what would you do? And you do. And suddenly I have 3 solutions that I even think of. I didn't think of that. Oh, I said, God, so smart. Thank God. So that means I'm learning something new. So asking for help is one of the key factors, you know, mm-hmm. because you don't know everything. So I love learning new things. Why don't you, you know, and sometimes when I call somebody, they say, I have no idea. But, you know, I have a friend that might know. Here's the number. And I, you know, I absolutely love that.
And even just this whole network of people that you've been introduced to now, because like you said, almost in every time zone, you have someone that you can, you know, be talking with in a community you wouldn't have created if you hadn't been an addict.
Of course not. Of course not.
So many blessings.
And so it is a blessing in disguise, and it is a challenge. And, you know, we are a wonderful tribe all over the world today that share life. And many times when I have people that are not addicted and I tell them about, you know, the solution method that we use, and or, you know, communication methods that we learn how to communicate our honest and deep feelings and all that, they say, oh, it sounds like everybody should do that program. And I said, sure, welcome. Sorry. And some people have said to me, God, I wish I was an alcoholic or an addict so I could, you know, go through this recovery program and learn these things, because there's nothing for us, you know. So people have said that to me, and I said, yeah, well, you know,
we're making the normies jealous now. But it is so true. This is work that really would benefit everybody, but we actually have, you know, this push to do it because we're trying to you know, help the addiction. But these are all these amazing tools and resources, and how you can have this total frame of mind change from, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing that could ever happen to me and I have to deal with this. And then flipping that around to actually, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And now I can really live my highest and best version of myself, and not just that little small version of yourself. Like that's what I have felt too. I just feel like I can live such a bigger life, you know, now. And I'm more, like you said, hopeful about it. I don't wake up in the morning with that dread. It's more like,
what did I do yesterday? And why did I eat that yesterday? And why did I blah, blah, blah? And I'm going to gain weight, and I'm going to get sick again, and my allergy is coming back, and blah, 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 blah. Why?
And you know what? I just remembered that the other day I was looking through this old planner that I found. It was like a calendar from, you know, before I was sugar and flour free. And every single day I had written down my weight. I was like, what are these numbers? And I was like, oh my gosh, I weighed myself every day and put it on the calendar.
Horrible. What a loss of energy.
In over 7 years, I just don't believe in the scale at all. But wow, that is how I used to live. And that would make or break my day every day.
Can you imagine if the energy you lost on only that thing, can you imagine where you could have evolved your life with that energy, and be, if you haven't had that horror hanging in your head about your weight?
Exactly. And I felt sad for a second, but then I also felt like, I can't even remember that person anymore. I can't believe I did do that. And then just felt so grateful for the recovery that I have, because I had totally forgotten that used to just be my daily norm every day. And not to say there aren't challenges, of course. That's the other thing. Like you were saying, you have that thinking, I forget how you put it, but like, if I just get that new job, if I just move, everything's going to be fine. Like I had thought for a while, if I just lost weight, everything would be fine. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was
one of the big ones. Well, I've lost the weight, but things still happen. Yes. You know, there's still challenges, but I'm just so much better equipped now.
That's true.
To deal with those challenges.
You know, life isn't a dance on roses, hanky dory every day. You know, it's the same life problems that we all encounter in my life, grief, sorrow, pain. But, you know, I'm equipped to deal with it in a totally different way than I was before. Before, you know, I would think, oh, God, I need a drink, or God, I need to eat. And then that didn't help me to mature as a human being. It just made me feel worse when I woke up from it. So it was a downhill slope. Now I can deal with it. I can be sad. I can be happy. I can, you know, explore all these things. And, you know, be upset that, like, yesterday I was very upset because, you know, I was in the middle of a job and Zoom went out again. I've had terrible technical problems lately. I'm working on solving it. And I just go, oh, duh. You know, I didn't even think about eating or doing anything about it. I was just, oh no, not again. You know, I was upset. It's totally okay to be upset, you know, or sad or mad or whatever. But, you know, I don't act on it in a destructive way to myself.
Yeah. That's the and difference. Then That's the that releases that feeling faster too, is what I found.
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
If you're numbing it. Yeah.
And also the thing that, you know, I know today that I can't control everything. I used to joke and say to my clients, say, oh, I have to control this. And I said, okay, go out and change the weather. Because some people are control freaks. And that's one of the absolutely most devastating loss of energy adventure you can start taking on. You know, we have to have faith. Things will happen, you know. The thing is, how do we deal with it? Mm-hmm. So I see people that try to control themselves and others, and even trying to control the weather. Well, I tell you, it's not going to work. It is very few things we can control. I can, you know, work on improve. And another thing people think, they're going to change their personality. No, no, no. You never, ever should change your personality. Be grateful over the personality you have, but you could improve some of your behaviors to function better. Don't mix those two. Don't think that you should be a different personality. Then you get sick. That's very dangerous to do. So, you know, people try to be something they're not. They're going to get burned out or sick. So, you know, I'm a speed freak. I'm not going to be a calm, collected person that have to think three steps before I do something. I'm very spontaneous. I jump in the wrong bucket sometimes, but I laugh and get out and jump in another one. Because, you know, I talk before I think. I walk fast. Everything goes fast with me. That's my personality. I'm never going to change that. So too bad. If you don't like it, don't stick around with me. That's the way I think today. And also not, you know, letting other people rule me by, you know, if they like what I do or not. I have to be me. I have to be totally true to me. Otherwise, you know, my life is not worth living. So it takes a lot of guts and courage to stand up and do that. But I promise you, you will be free.
Mm-hmm. And I do feel like that now. And I'm actually much more comfortable in my skin and feel much more like I can be me, you know, like you said, I'm not trying to change or think I'm too much of this or that. It's just, I've taken this full acceptance. This is who I am. But I agree. Yeah. I am still working. Like, I'm a little bit of a control freak. I was raising my hand when you were talking about that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Something I'm really working on is letting it. So like you said, there are still behaviors, you know, that I can work on and improve. And now again, I have the mind and brain that's working better to do that, but also the tools to do it as well. But really, I've accepted who I am at the very core of who I am. And that was, what is a better gift than that, really? Like, how many people can really say that, you know?
Yeah, right. I agree.
I'm with you. I'd much rather have this illness. And I've gone through that poor me, everyone else is eating dessert. Why can't I? And once in a while, Red Dog will get back in there and, you know, like try to bring me there. But for the most part, I can flip that right away with, thank God that's not me anymore. And
exactly.
Just how much better my life is now than it was before when I was having the substance, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I think the most important thing is to wake up in the morning and think, how will I handle today's challenges? Mm. You know, asking for strength to deal with it, to be smart enough to solve things and deal with it. And I mean, if you look back, have there ever been a day that you couldn't handle life at all? No, probably not. You know, so a lot of, you know, many of us is, as we jokingly say, worryholics. You know, we think about, you know, oh my God, I have to go to this wedding 3 months from now. And what shall I eat? And what if they have cake there? And, or this going to happen? And what if this going to happen? We paint up this scenario, you know, ahead of us, stumble stones and rocks and all that. The thing that we forget, and I have a picture I used to show my clients about this. Wait a minute. If you walk with an open mind, you know, and listen to your surroundings and ask for help, you're going to gain tools to deal with that rock 3 months from now. But, you know, if you walk like this and hiding and close your face and not listening, not learning, of course, it's going to be a problem when you come to that rock. But that's not what we do. So, you know, tomorrow I might find a book that will give me the solution I need 3 months from now, or I'm going to meet a person that teaches me something that I will get, you know. If you have that attitude, I will solve whatever comes my way because I am open-minded. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at the word open-minded. I take in, I change, you know, I improve my behavior. I'm curious. Curiosity is really a wonderful thing to have. You know, creative, you know, I can come up with solutions. If you have that belief about yourself, you know, you will meet any challenge.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And again, coming back to that addicted person, just having the strength and the sensitivity too, and then having that open mind, like then yeah. You are just like unstoppable, basically. Like the sky's the limit for your life.
Yeah.
And the curiosity too. I love that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you. Creativity. What's that?
Creativity.
And creativity. Oh, I agree. Yep. And that can be expressed. I used to think I am not a creative person. And I'm like, actually podcast is part of my creativity. And then I started really looking and be like, I am a really creative person. It's
yes,
just
in you
a
are.
Different way.
Oh, that's so funny. Very creative. Oh my God. That's funny that you thought that.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's just such a changing the way you think about things, you know, and just switching that frame of mind is so important. So I love this topic so much. Thank you, Bitten, for talking about that. I think it'll be really motivating for people listening, especially those people, you know, I know people listening right now still struggling that I don't want to give up that was me for a long time. I knew I was an addict.
Well,
but I was,
you know,
trying everything to moderate because I didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, the drug has hijacked your brain. So you think that a life without a drug would be horrible. That's the way Red Dog fools you to think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but the thing is, I wanted to say too that, you know, hook up with people, hook up with other people that understand, with professionals, with other people in recovery. They're going to take your hand and lead you out of the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the way we do it. So one day you have learned how to find your way out of this jungle and be free. You hook up with somebody and lead them out. That is the beauty of recovery, that, you know, we do help each other.
Yeah, I love that. Well, is there anything else, Bitten, today that maybe we didn't get to that you wanted to mention, or just any last words of advice for people that are listening today?
No, only that, you know, I know how it feels to be there, the shame, the pain. I know that. So I know that many people listen, maybe feel that, but I'm saying there is a door, you know, go through the door, ask for help, let somebody hold your hand and start walking over the bridge from the darkness into the light.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Bitten. Love having you on. I'm going to make sure
Thank
to link
you.
All of our previous episodes for people to listen if you haven't. And you'll hear more about Bitten's story, her background, and a lot of the earlier interviews that we did. And I'll also make sure I link your website and details on how to get in touch with so people can find you. So thank you again so much.
Thank you, Siobhan.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.